On this episode of the Sophisticated Property Investing Podcast.
Nothing for months and months and months, and then I'll get two or three deals in the same month. If I hadn't advertised that month, if I'd taken a month off, where would I be? You never know when it's going to happen, and you just have to kind of stay motivated and try and keep your head strong and clear and go with it. There's a lot to be said for that.
Welcome to Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.
Mr. Owen Harris, welcome to the EPP Podcast. How are you, sir?
Very well, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, I'm good. I was just saying it's been a while since we've had a chat, mate. You're busy paddling your canoe. You've got a... Well, when you joined EPP, how long ago was that now?
It's about 4.5 years ago now. So I think I've got about... I'm 5 years in April.
When you joined, you were one of the fastest starters I think we'd ever had. I think you did 12 deals in 12 months, something like that, certainly above 10. And you were living on a canal boat. You were moving every 2 weeks or so. I remember you explaining the system to me. And now I think you live in a house. You've got a family. It's all changed. So will you talk us through that journey a little bit, Owen?
Well, it's changed somewhat, really. We lived in London on a houseboat. We lived in London on a boat for about 9 years. It's a lovely life. It just kind of lockdown happened, and we... just the draw of the sea again, and being near family, and we decided to have a little... we've got a little girl now, which has completely changed our lives. It's just didn't realize we didn't need to be in London anymore, so just the quality of life kind of took over. It's nice to have some space and nice to have more people around.
So you say you're near the sea, whereabouts are you?
We're in Portsmouth on the south coast now.
I remember you had a few properties in Portsmouth when you came on board 4.5 years ago. Tell me how many. I want to say five, but I'm dredging the banks of my memory. Was it five?
I did have five. It was five student HMOs. I just sold them all because I saw the market changing, and I thought it was getting competitive. Everything. I'd had HMOs for about 8 years. It was getting harder to let them, and students were getting more picky, and everyone was... it's when everyone started developing big blocks of private student accommodation. So I saw it was time to move on. I had there was some decent capital in there because of Article 4 and whatnot. So I thought it was to take that and maybe make it work a bit harder. Did a bit of research, and I thought I'd sold it, and I bought a couple of HMOs in London and spent a fortune doing them up. That was about half of my equity that I'd realised, and I needed to make the other half. So I was looking around at every course I could find and doing my research, and I've eventually found Ethical Property Partners, or Frank Partnership as it was at the time.
And it was... that brings back some memories. Do you know, I was doing some painting in the house yesterday, and I went to my little pile of dust sheets in the shed, and one of them was a Frank Partnership tablecloth, and that brought back the memories. And that's funny that you mentioned the old name. Yeah,
and now it's been relegated to the dust sheets. So
it has. I know, how sad. Yeah, it's got all gloss paint on it now. I'm rubbish at painting. So you came across Frank Partnership.
Yes, and it just seemed... I ripped off years ago with a lease option scheme that and the guy disappeared, and I had my fingers burned, really. So I was really cautious and was doing as much research as I could, but there's something about Frank Partnership seemed a bit different, and I wanted to get into BMV for years. I'd seen it around, but didn't quite know how to get going with it, and it seemed... everything just... I came to an introduction day with you, and it just everything seemed to make sense. It was great having the system there and then seeing people who were doing it, and it's changed my life. It's fantastic.
Excellent. Well, we'll drill into that, because the topic of this particular interview, Owen, and the reason I've asked to interview you, is the benefits of consistent action in a singular direction. So consistent, focused action. So we'll come back to that if we can. I want to just drill into your decision to sell in Portsmouth, though, because I've just been offered 3 student properties from a landlord that wants to get out in the southeast, funnily enough. The deal that I would do on almost any other type of property, I've not been willing to do on student accommodation for the reasons that you've just talked about, because there are so many purpose-built blocks being built. It's probably my least favorite of all monetization strategies. And it's born out of exactly what you said, you know, the universities and the big pension funds building masses of student purpose-built student accommodation that the old houses that have been converted into student houses can't compete with. And I just wondered, looking back, because you've now got the benefit of 5, 6, 7 years of hindsight, was it the right decision to make? What's happened to student accommodation in Portsmouth?
Well, I think it's finally maybe starting to go full circle, but I think it's been a very hard period for a lot of landlords. There's been a lot of voids. I think people have just had empty properties, had to rent them to charities and whatever, do whatever they can really just to try and just to fill them, especially with recently. I think maybe there's a bit of a backlash because there's so many expensive purpose-built halls. I think people, the students now want to go back into houses. I think the novelty of all the saunas and the cinema rooms and whatnot might have worn off, and there is a cheaper option. I think, but it's probably cost related, isn't it?
Yeah, and I imagine there's an element of the university growing as well. I don't know if Portsmouth University is growing or whether there are other universities there, but if they're taking on board more and more, their businesses at the end of the, I know they're charities, but at the end of the day, they're wanting to grow. And so if they're taking on more and more students, that obviously creates more demand as well. Oh, that's interesting that it's come full circle in that part of the world.
I think, it's very much down to the product as well. It has to look unique and it has to tick some boxes for them. I think the days of just a ropey old charity shop sofa and peeling magnolia walls are over. It has to be, it has to look good.
So you came across us, came to our one day seminar, decided to come on board. I remember it well. Talk us through your first year then, Owen. My main memory, I can remember coming up to, we should probably say you were building your portfolio in Manchester, despite living in London, which is a challenge in and of itself. And I can remember coming up to Manchester, I don't know when it would have been, 9 months in, 10, 12 months in, sometime around the end of your first year. And just being blown away by how many deals you'd done in that period of time. So talk us through how you got going, mate, and how you found it.
It was an amazing first year. I started advertising straight away and just took action. And I think just hit the market right. I was using a newspaper advert to source predominantly in those days, and it was just had loads of interest. Everything kind of stacked up. We did 12 deals in a year, but it was pretty full on. Really did struggle to manage refurbs and whatnot from a distance. Went through a couple of letting agents who didn't really do me any favors to start with, but ended up finding good builders, finding a good agent. I think having a good agent is really key at a distance, but it does mean you can kind of leverage your time a lot more. It went well, and everything's now let. It slowed down a bit somewhat after then. It was a great learning curve. It's quite steep.
Absolutely. Well, when you're doing that many deals, you are going to learn tons and tons, aren't you?
Yeah.
A question that immediately jumps out at me, you were living on a canal boat in London. Why Manchester? This is probably the question I get asked the most. Where in the country should I be investing? I can't travel very much, so where can I invest? Or I'm completely free in terms of geography. I'm willing to live anywhere. Where should I invest? So what went into that decision to pick Manchester?
I've got family roots up there. My mum was born just outside Manchester, and I've still got a couple of relations up there. I love the city. I love the excitement of it and the countryside. It's so easy and quick to get out into the countryside. You can just get around, and it's a good kind of cross-section of property as well. You've got a really good bits and slightly worse bits, and the yields are fantastic. So and there's also a good potential for capital growth up there. I mean, I say Manchester, but it's obviously I focus more on the suburbs really, and the peripheries, north and east generally, just because I find my model works there better.
That's interesting, because when people say Manchester, a lot of people will be thinking, oh, high-rise flats then, you know, in the centre. What kind of distance from the centre of Manchester are we talking for your portfolio?
I don't own any city centre apartments. All my properties are predominantly Victorian terraces around the north and east Manchester. So they're kind of Audenshaw, Openshaw, Droylsden, Stockport, Oldham, it's kind of Bury, Haywood around there. So on the peripheries, but easy to get into town. So there's normally good tram links, and you can normally drive in within half an hour. But also maybe slightly less well-off areas that I see possibly have the potential for more of an uplift, rather than kind of southwest, which is already pretty gentrified and close to southern money. But then again, you can get there so quickly. It's the quality of life seems a lot better up there as well. The rents are low and the property prices are quite low, so people can have a good quality of life and get out into the countryside and get into the city. And coming from London, I just saw that it was a much different kind of lifestyle option for people.
So we'll come on to what's happened over the last 5 years in a minute. But in terms of the numbers when you were buying, so in that first year, what were the values of those properties? What were you able to secure them at, and what kind of rents were you achieving?
Values were in the region of normally sort of 80 to 100,000 I was purchasing at, with the rents sort of low 400s going up for slightly bigger ones and slightly better locations. I found it's changed a lot in recent times.
In what way has it changed, mate?
The values have gone up significantly. So we're looking at a property that would have cost me 80,000 would now probably struggling to find it at 120.
What's that, a 50% increase over a 5 year period? That is incredible. And now I bet you're glad you bought 12 of them.
Yeah, certainly am, because I can't source like that anymore. You know, also, I think the market is a lot more saturated. There's a lot of southern money piling up there, so it's harder to source. There are still deals around, but
that capital growth, that's £480,000 over just 5 years. That's £100,000 a year in capital growth from 1 year's hard work. It's that's amazing. But not only that, that's if you'd paid market value. But what were you picking them up for if they were worth 80 to 100? What were you picking them up for?
Normally work with a 25% discount, so I was picking them up for around 60.
That was your first year, and at the top of this interview you said that one-day seminar and coming on with EPP has changed your life. In what way? What has the next 3.5 years looked like? You said that you had to catch your breath, and I remember when I walked around, it was like a whirlwind. So I can imagine you needing to finish refurbishing a lot of them, tenanting them, etc., getting your systems in place for the other three pillars. So you'd nailed the marketing and sales pillar of your sophisticated property investing business. And then you'd worked really hard on the financing and conveyancing pillar. So you were completing on them, but then it was time to focus on the refurbishment, compliance, and then the monetization pillar. So you worked hard on that. But what did that next 3.5 years look like? How many deals did you do? Where did you focus?
Still focused on the same area. Advertising got a lot harder, but I kept at it consistently. I've taken a bit of a break because of the baby, and because we've moved, and I've got a mortgage of my own now and whatnot. I intend to get back to it. But it was just kind of just getting my ducks in a row again, and finding a good agent really made the world a difference, and a couple of good sets of builders. Being able to source, slowing down a bit, did help me, because I could catch up with myself and get all the refurbs done and get everything let and build good relationships with people. My power team was fantastic, and I'm really happy with every link in the chain really now.
So how many deals have you done post that first year?
I've done 29 in total now, so I'm
fantastic. So take out the 12 from the first 17 over 3.5 years. So what's that? Roughly 5 a year, isn't it? Which is by no means slow. That's like most people would be delighted. And the way you were speaking then, I thought you were going to say, you know, you'd just done another 3 or 4 in total, and yet you've carried on doing an amazing amount. So what about your personality, what about your approach has enabled you to keep doing 5 or 6 deals a year? Incidentally, that's how many I've averaged over the last 15 years or so, is 5 or 6 purchases a year for myself. I think it's a really good number to be able to do consistently. How have you managed to do it? What tips would you give other people listening to this that perhaps are doing 1 a year at the moment and want to raise their game?
It is just taking consistent action, really. And you don't know when they're going to happen. And I'll get nothing for months and months and months. And then I'll get 2 or 3 deals in the same month. If I hadn't advertised that month, if I'd taken a month off, where would I be? You never know when it's going to happen. And you just have to kind of stay motivated and try and keep your head strong and clear and go with it. And just don't get too demoralized about it. It's going to be hard. You're going to get a lot of no's before someone agrees. But just kind of just getting all your systems in place getting your plan together and sticking to it. There's a lot to be said for that.
Let's talk through your current marketing. Still doing newspaper, still doing leaflets. What's your main marketing strategies now?
More recently, I've been doing leaflets because the newspaper got quite saturated at times. You never know where it's going to come from. Our marketing does appeal to a certain type of person. It's not a big flashy advert or whatnot. So, but when you get them, and it does take a while to build the confidence with it, so you do have to stick with it. So people who said, well, I've seen your advert for weeks in the paper, and I've only just got around to calling it now. It's the consistency that builds the trust, I think, or builds the recognition that makes people act on it.
And if you say that the newspaper got a bit saturated at times, that speaks volumes of how most approach this business, because you'll see the big adverts going that are four times bigger than our adverts, and they don't last. Often they'll be gone within 3 months, and that's what people are watching for. And people don't realize this. They whack their adverts in, and after a month think, oh, it's not working, and stop. But often it can take 3, 4, 5 months for someone to see your advert before they trust you enough, really. So when you say it's got a lot harder to source, in what way? What kind of numbers are you looking at now? Because 5, 6 deals a year sounds brilliant, but not if you're spending 200 grand a year on marketing, you know. So what was it like, and what is it like now?
It's still not particularly expensive. My acquisition cost's probably in the region of about £2,000 to £3,000 a deal, whereas previously it was probably in the region of 1,000 to 1,500. It's still worth doing.
It's still below the national average, mate. National average is still about 3,800. So you're still quids in, really.
Yeah.
Are you still managing to purchase at 25% below a Rick's valuation?
Yeah, I'm still managing 25%. Doing a few more kind of slightly more sophisticated solutions for people, because I think people need a service, or I'm appealing to people who need something a bit extra that a normal buyer wouldn't do.
We're seeing lots more of those at the moment, especially in the current market where it's quite buoyant, and so people that just want a quick sale can get one relatively quick. And but it's those unusual situations where a conventional sale doesn't work. So fantastic. 29 deals in 4.5 years. Amazing. In what kind of a financial impact has that made on you? So if they're all 25%, what's the average value now? So if we say the average value 4.5 years ago was 90K, what would you say it is now?
Probably sort of 110, 120.
So if we say 100K just for ease, then that's roughly in the middle. And we've got 29 of those. That's a massive amount of equity you've built in. I'm just grabbing my calculator. 25,000 times 29 properties. That's 725K in equity. However, we've also got the capital growth, haven't we, on the early ones as well. So well over £1 million in equity you've got now. Do you know what the actual number is, Owen, out of interest?
It's just over £1 million.
What about cash flow, though? What's your monthly net profit from those?
Been a bit harder at the moment. We've had a lot of voids and a lot of refurbs that are doing with the kind of the old lot that have gone. But net monthly is about probably £7,000.
£7,000 a month. Fantastic. When you say you've had a lot of voids, why? Is that COVID related? Have you got some HMOs in there? Is it Manchester related?
My voids predominantly have been my London HMOs, which originally I thought were the golden goose, and now quite the opposite. I found it really hard to let HMOs in London, even though they're high spec, but the rents have dropped right down, and the people just, I think COVID's just, and people aren't looking to live in shared houses. People are leaving town, and the ones that are in town are wanting to get places of their own. I've really noticed that the tenants I am getting are very, very low salaries. So I think it seems that anyone who can afford it is just getting their own place.
Who wouldn't want to go live on their own now if they could? You know, yeah, it makes sense. How many bed spaces have you got in your London HMOs then, mate?
I've got 12. And obviously, one room in London is the equivalent of one house up north. So
you
empty and you really notice it.
I bet you're glad of your Manchester ones then to make up for the voids in London.
Yeah, I certainly am, definitely.
You've said taking consistent action. You're like a perfect example of that, Owen. You know, 29 properties over 4.5 years is phenomenal. easy to say, but how do you keep your motivation? How do you keep taking that action every week? As you know, I've walked alongside many partners, many members who've come and tried their 4-month trial and then not had what it takes to be invited onto the partnership. What techniques do you use? What skills do you use? Because for every one of you, I can probably name 3 people that haven't taken consistent action and therefore don't have the results that you have. What would you recommend, or what do you think it is about your approach that works for you?
Knowing that it has worked, and it does work in my area, I'm sure it doesn't work in every area, but having my first year has really kind of given me faith that it is possible. So if I keep at it, it will happen. Mm. Just kind of staying and just looking after yourself and having your routine and exercising and knowing what you're doing and knowing how your team work and just trying to pick yourself up and keep going. But then if it's the self, a lot of it is kind of self-care and kind of staying positive. If you just bury your head in the sand and get demoralized with it all, it just seems to take over.
It's so easy to get demoralized. I remember a conversation I had a few months ago. I might have mentioned this on the podcast already. I'm turning into my granddad telling the same stories over and over, but this particular person I was speaking to said, well, it's impossible to do sophisticated property investing at the moment, you know, the market's going crazy. This was February time 2021. And I said, what do you mean it's impossible? And they said, well, you know, the economy's on its knees and no one's buying any houses. Like, take condoms. I was reading about condom sales the other day. Through the floor. They've never seen it. It's at something like 10% of normal sales. And I was like, really? Really, is that your indicator that property investing isn't going to work? Condom sales when all the nightclubs in the country are shut. But you see what you want to see, don't you? And if you want to hear doom and gloom, there's an opportunity or probably 10 opportunities an hour from watching the news, etc. So yeah, keeping your chin up, I think, is essential. You mentioned sticking to your routine. What is your routine, Owen? Because you've had crazy busy. I remember you doing 50, 60 hours a week, whizzing up to Manchester and that when you were doing those properties whilst learning all the EPP stuff. But what's it? What's a normal day in the life of Owen now, given that, you know, you're a more mature investor, you're not doing 12 in a year, you're doing 5 or 6. What's that routine look like for you?
It's much calmer now, especially with the baby, and just getting up early now, which is much easier now. I have an early morning wake-up call every day. And,
what time does your baby wake up each morning?
She's normally 5:30, 6 every day, so it's not too bad. I can kind of get up and ease myself into the day and look after until Rosie's ready to.
I bet Rosie appreciates that, yeah.
Yeah. The best thing is that being able to share this time together. I don't know what other job I could have that would allow me to be around and allow me to really see the early days of my daughter growing up. I mean, I've been with her every day, really, for the 4 months. And yeah, Rosie's got another 6 weeks maternity, so I'm trying to keep my diary fairly quiet so we can spend as much time together as possible.
So you're up bright and early with Alwyn. What's the rest of your day look like?
We try and get out for a walk every day. The best thing about being back in Portsmouth has been go for a walk on the seafront. I'll go to the gym every day. The other great thing about being, when we were in London, I was on the boat. I had to get to the studio, which is a cycle to a studio, which in itself was quite a chore. But now I can be at my desk at 8 o'clock, catching up with everything. But it means I'm only doing a couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours work a day, really. That's all it takes. And everything can be managed from my phone and remotely. And 5 deals a year is manageable. It's not massively demanding, and then the rest of my time can just run my portfolio and concentrate on growing the business.
It's so funny, Owen, you say it flippantly, 5 deals a year. Do you mind me asking how old you are, mate?
I'm 38.
We're about the same age then. I'm 39. 5 deals a year, just fast forward 15 years, mate. Imagine the portfolio you're going to have then. It really does start to compound, doesn't it? It's fantastic. And when you say 2 to 3 hours a day, what are you doing in that time? How does it break down?
I still do most of my admin myself. I haven't outsourced anything. I haven't found the need to yet. So other than a bookkeeper, I'm just keeping on top of my accounts and chain chasing for purchases. But I've got such a good relationship with my conveyancers now that I can just do that on WhatsApp, and it's nice and easy and doesn't tend to intrude. There's a lot of the time spent on the phone, kind of try and speak to my vendors every week just to reassure them everything, even if nothing's happening, just to kind of reassure them and make sure they're okay and that I'm still there and things are moving forward, especially at the moment where banks are so slow that it's good to keep on top of these things.
Sounds relaxed, mate. You sound relaxed. It's good. How often do you have to go up to Manchester now, given that you're still building and you've got that 29 properties up there?
Probably once a month at the moment. I was going up every week, but just I've got two refurbs on at the moment, which are kind of just ticking over. And the rest of it, I'm not sourcing currently. So I have a lot less meetings up there. So it's quite calm these days, but I envisage when I start sourcing again, I'll probably get back to weekly trips.
How long does that take you? How long did it take you from London? How long does it take you now from Portsmouth? Is that about the same?
It's probably slightly quicker from London. I could do it in probably, the best thing was it's ideal to get the train up if possible, but it's not, if you're seeing a few different vendors and generally not in the most central of places, I have to drive. So it'd take me 3.5-4 hours each way. And I'd go there and back in a day just to get it out of the way. But I didn't see the need to stay overnight. I stayed overnight a few times, but I quite like to get back to my bed.
I speak to people and they say, I'm only willing to invest within 30 minutes of my house. And I go, okay, but given the amount of money you've got and given where you live, that's going to be really, really hard and really, really slow. So are you willing to drive 2 hours? And in your case, 3.5-4 hours, in order to be in an amazing area for the strategies that will work best for you, in order to, do probably 10 times as many deals. And they'll say no. You think, oh my goodness, like you've just said, once a week, a 7-hour drive is no mean feat, there and back. But once a week in order to buy 29 houses over the next 4.5 years, is that a compromise you're willing to make? And you've made it, Owen. And I'm a big believer in how you do one thing is how you do everything. And if you're willing to delay your gratification in that one area of traveling to your goldmine area, you'll be doing it in other areas of your business. And that is why you get those results. It might be financial. I doubt very much that it's been plain sailing and you've had a nice buffer, a consistent buffer of 5 figures in your bank account for the entire 5 years. I imagine it's got a bit tight at times and you've had to tighten your belt. And that happens. It happens in property. It happens with your money. It happens with your time. But being willing to be slightly uncomfortable now in order to have the results that you desire and to be very comfortable later on is, I think, it's part of that consistent approach. In what way do you think you've had to compromise or delay gratification when you think you could have thrown in the towel or given up on parts of your business?
Just sticking at it and keeping advertising, and most of our money as a household goes on growing our business. I live pretty humbly. We lived on the boat. Life was cheap. Life's got a bit more expensive now. I'm kind of willing to take sacrifices now. I drive an old car. We don't go on fancy holidays, but I see that we're using our cash now to kind of improve our lives in the future and improve the life of my kids. So that's kind of what makes it okay. Sometimes hard to reason with my partner about, but.
Especially in marketing, because marketing is so nebulous, isn't it? You can't say, look, when we put this in, we're going to get this. Because as you say, you might not get a lead for a few months. And it's like,
what, you spent all this money and nothing's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. Clearly you have similar conversations with your partner as I do with mine. What's the future hold for you, Owen? You've had an amazing 4.5 years. What do you see changing, if anything? What are your plans?
I want to just get to the point really where I can have someone hands-on in Manchester, employed all the time, kind of looking after the portfolio and helping me on the ground. And I definitely want to be at the point where I can just have a newspaper advert and leafleting permanently, and sign up to almost year long contracts with these people, and just not think about it. Because currently I'm like, how can I afford to advertise? Should I be advertising? Whereas if it was just a case of just keeping it running permanently, I'd overcome that, wouldn't I? I want to carry on growing my portfolio. I think 5 years manageable. If I can do a few more, then that would be great. But I'm not. I want to keep on top of it. I don't want anything to slack. I want to look after my vendors. I want to be able to cash flow everything. So just need to kind of learn my limits and stick with them and carry on as I am.
How many properties do you think you need to get to before you can employ that person full time in Manchester?
I think I'm almost there. I think maybe another five or so, and I'll be there. I was umming and ahhing about whether I'm at the point where just having my own letting agent, really, just having someone who was full time just worked on my lettings. But it's just what people do, isn't it? You want people to specialise in an area. I don't want one person to do everything. Yeah, refurbs sometimes take a bit longer than they should do, but just need to work out where my priorities lie.
I tell you what, the timing of the housing market might be perfect for you, mate, because the growth that we've seen and the number of transactions, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a contraction, and that will mean redundancies in the housing sector, which means whenever there are redundancies, it's a great time to recruit because you've got quality people at lower salaries available. So that could work really well for you over the next 6 to 12 months. Yeah. From a lettings perspective, I've tried it both ways. So I've had nearly all of my properties with letting agents, and I've had a large proportion managed by my team. And it's interesting, I've swung back at the moment to letting agents. So nearly all my properties with letting agents, again, I think I've got 5% managed in-house by the team. And I struggle. It's interesting. I've spoken to landlords that swear by managing them all themselves, and I've spoken to landlords that swear by having them with letting agents. I struggle to justify paying my team to manage because it costs so much more than I pay 8% for my portfolio management to my letting agents. And when I look at what they do, I look at the holiday cover, you know, it doesn't matter what day of the year, there's someone at the end of the phone in the letting agency. I look at their contacts because my letting agents manage about 1,000 properties. And so they've got not just one plumber, they've got 5 plumbers they can call. They've not just got the electrician, they've got 5 electricians, et cetera, et cetera. You still get 18-year-olds answering the phone, spending your money, which I've always struggled with, you know, someone who's never owned their own property, spending my money on my investment properties. But overall, yes, they cost me slightly more money in terms of maintenance, et cetera. They probably save me quite a lot of money in terms of voids because they can do viewings when my team can't. They're more responsive. They're closer to my properties than my offices are. And they cost me less in terms of the 8%. You know, my team, paying my team's salaries is more than 8%. Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'd be fascinated to see how it goes. Make sure we have a one-to-one session before you do it, Owen, so that I can talk you through our experiences and you can decide what kind of person, because I've made mistakes. I've bought on full-time letting agents for myself, actually. And there's certainly a type of person I would go for and a type of person I wouldn't go for again if I did it again. So, yeah, it's all exciting. It's all part of the game, mate, isn't it?
It's all chess, isn't it? I don't know which way to go.
Well, chess and Monopoly. I think it's like a combination of the two. Yeah, my kids have got into Monopoly now. They were playing Mexican Monopoly last month when we were in Mexico, and that was hilarious with all these. They were doing it in pesos, and they knew what the pesos were. It's hilarious. But yeah, I think it's a combination of chess and Monopoly for sure.
Do you let them win, or do you?
I'm like competitive dad with anything. So yeah, no, I can't let them win. That take the satisfaction. They beat me though. They beat me at Monopoly now. They're like, and they'll do deals between themselves to like cut me out. It's funny. It's like
brilliant. Kids are in trouble, aren't you? Yeah.
My youngest, Michael, he's like really into property and investing. He was like, Dad, take a photo. We were looking at property while we were there. He said, Dad, take a photo of that one. There's a lot of vendor sales. It seemed a lot more normal to sell a property by putting your own board outside with a website address on it or a phone number, you know, WhatsApp us on this, or here's a QR code, go have a look at our website. And people are just like creating their own GoDaddy websites to sell their property. So he was like, Dad, can I take a photo of this? Can I take a photo of this? And then we'd get back and I expected him to forget about it. He's like, right, let me grab your phone, Dad. I've got the iPad. I want to have a look at that property. Really, really into it. My eldest couldn't care less. He's like, focused on Roblox and stuff. But yeah, Michael, my youngest, is really into it. It's interesting.
Fantastic. We need always new sources, don't we? So.
Well, that's it. Yeah, yeah. He's actually said, how old do I have to be, he said, before I can work in the business, Dad? And I was like, mate, as soon as you can bring value. And he said, what's that mean? I said, you know, as soon as you can do stuff that saves me doing stuff. And he said, well, I can read and write already, Dad. He's 8, right? I can read and write already, Dad. I was like, nearly, mate, nearly.
Taking photos of estate agents, of vendors selling their own houses. I think he's already adding value, isn't he? So.
Exactly. Definitely. Owen, it's been a pleasure, mate. Really good to chat. I'm so excited about your success and also your changing circumstances, building your family and building your portfolio. So best of luck for the future, mate. And I've loved walking with you so far on this journey.
Thanks so much. Good to talk to you, Frank.
And you, mate. Take care.
Sophisticated Property Investing, a podcast brought to you by Ethical Property Partners, the experts in sophisticated property investment.